Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that sees happiness as a state of mind, one that for many people tends to disappear as quickly as a sprinkle of rain on a hot sidewalk. For the three of us, however, nothing pushes us toward happiness more than a couple of hours immersed in quality cinema. The three films that we'll be discussing this week all, in one way or another, involve the search for happiness. First up is the documentary Roadrunner, Morgan Neville's look at the life and legacy of the traveling gourmet Anthony Bourdain. We'll follow that with a curious blend of narrative and documentary, the Spanish language Te Llevo Conmigo, or in English, I Carry You With Me. And we'll finish with a true curiosity, Pig, which stars the great Nicolas Cage. Let's begin this week's show by looking back at the life of the man who brought an appreciation of food and travel to American television. When it was reported 3 years ago that the former chef, food critic, world traveler, and television personality Anthony Bourdain had died, his fans were shocked. That shock grew appreciably when they learned that he had committed suicide. How could a guy so personable, knowledgeable, and yet with the soul of a born maverick give up on life in so seemingly blithe a manner? The answer to that question may never be known, since Bourdain didn't leave a suicide note. But in Morgan Neville's documentary Roadrunner, we get a few clues. Mainly his addictive personality, which once embraced heroin, moved on to hard kitchen work, and then, improbably, to his reign as a celebrity chef, a term he reportedly detested. Neville also explains how Bourdain came to be television's most approachable proponent, not just of food, but of the cultural experience that travel has to offer. We also get to see the real pain felt by those who knew him best, friends and one former wife, all of whom were left wondering whether they could ever have staved off what ultimately happened.
I think it's fair to say that people are going to bring themselves, of course, to this documentary because some people gravitated toward what Bourdain had to offer because they became familiar with him through his Kitchen Confidential book, which was an extended version of an article in The New Yorker from way back when. So people, anyone who's worked in the food industry in any capacity will certainly appreciate some aspects of this documentary, although it's really not a behind-the-scenes look at what happens. So there's that. Anybody who has any sort of addictive or obsessive personality will appreciate this portrait of Anthony Bourdain. And Dan, you didn't even mention his successful attempts to become a jiu-jitsu champion late in life. So when he took something on, he went all in for sure. And then finally, there's the story and the portrait of a man who is troubled, who has some problems with intimacy despite more than one marriage. And so I think that people will appreciate all those aspects. But of course, what do we know and love about Anthony Bourdain? I mean, we have friends who can quote from different episodes from across the world. And we do know that Tony Bourdain became the ambassador for travel, for culture, especially in out-of-the-way places such as the Democratic Republic of Congo or Haiti or Myanmar. And I do think that this documentary does a good job of sort of showcasing those aspects of who he was. I'm less enthused about our really getting to know him as a person. And maybe, Dan, as you indicated up front, that's not possible. And maybe that's why his suicide was so shocking to so many people, because we had come to know him as a regular companion on these outrageous and exciting adventures. So why would this guy who seemingly had it all, at least from my perspective as a travel junkie, want to off himself, you know, at age 61? And we get some clues about that, although I'm a little skeptical. At one point, Bourdain says that he had a happy childhood, and Kitchen Confidential would suggest as much, but I'm skeptical about that, just saying. So we have the focal point, the subject of the movie, Anthony Bourdain. And we have the movie itself, which has generated some controversy that I think we can talk about a little later. But all in all, even though I think the last quarter of the movie fell apart a little bit, so we're talking about Roadrunner, I do think overall that this is well worth watching, of course. And those of you who are particular Anthony Bourdain fans, I think will appreciate at least its love letter aspects, because there are interviews with a number of people who were truly, truly close with him and were, as we can well imagine, devastated by his loss.
Yeah, and I should say up front that I'm coming into this movie with really only a passing familiarity with Anthony Bourdain. Obviously, I know who he is. I've seen some of his shows, but I was not a super fan before this. I guess I'll lead here with some of the issues I had with Roadrunner, which, of course, is sort of it's kind of a double meaning. It's both based on the Modern Lovers song Roadrunner, but it's also about the fact that he was traveling all the time. I think he said something like almost 300 days a year he was out there running roads. This is a problem I've had with a lot of contemporary documentaries. When they're using archival footage, especially stuff that was shot on like cheap digital video or videotape, the filmmakers are blowing it up to fill a movie screen aspect ratio, and it looks really cruddy. There are parts in the first half of this movie where the archival footage is really difficult to look at. So that's a minor point, but I keep saying it a lot, and I wish people would pay attention to that. There are also some threads that Morgan Neville, the filmmaker, just doesn't follow. I mean, for instance, there's sort of a motif running throughout the movie where he keeps cutting to clips of classic films like The 400 Blows and 8 and a Half. And there's a long-running thing involving Apocalypse Now, which they do explain. That makes sense. But the rest of them, I thought, okay, so are they going to talk about Bourdain's cinephilia? Because I know he was a movie fan. The movie doesn't really get into that. And it also doesn't get into, as you said, Bourdain's early life. I mean, it basically starts with him writing and publishing Kitchen Confidential, and they're only kind of passing references to his life before that, you know, working his way up in kitchens and his time struggling with heroin addiction. There is some of that later in the film, but as somebody that doesn't really know his life that well, I maybe wanted a little bit more. I guess I have a lot more issues than I thought I did, but you mentioned the last quarter of this movie kind of falling apart a little bit. There is a talking head that kind of accuses him of losing his sense of nuance in the last years of his life. And I think the movie is kind of guilty of the same thing. I think that and I think there's probably more we could go into that we don't have time for. But I do think it's dealing with some really tricky topics in not a frivolous manner, but I don't think it's giving them enough time. I mean, the movie, it's only 2 hours, so it's not like they have. Maybe this needed to be more of a miniseries than a 2-hour film. But despite the fact that I just led with all of those issues, this is a compelling portrait of a man who I think was probably super difficult to profile. I mean, like you said, your hands kind of close on air at the end in a way, and that's sort of indicative of his entire life. I mean, we find out that he was this very shy, quiet, agoraphobic guy who then had to assume this role of kind of globe-trotting bad boy. I mean, he sort of kind of created that persona himself, but the shows that he did only, you know, exacerbated that. And then that role kind of subsumed his actual personality. And I find that push and pull to be the most fascinating element of this documentary and of him as a man.
And of the topics that you talked about, we don't even have time to get into the whole controversy over director Neville using artificial intelligence to
simulate.
Yes. Bourdain's voice, which, to tell you the truth, since those are real quotes from Bourdain, I don't think that that's an issue at all. And he did clear it with the wife. He cleared it with the producers. And also, we never get into the details of his life. There's no interview with Aja Argento, the woman he was with at the end, who he broke up with, and or she broke up with him, and people blamed her for the death. We don't even get into that. But as anyone, and I'm sure, Nathan, you can relate to this, as anyone who's ever worked in journalism, when you're attacking a story, you try to get to the essential parts. And once you start opening one little box, you start playing with Russian dolls, and it leads to this, it leads to this, it leads to this. And so consequently, I sympathize with Neville's trying to limit what he did.
I guess my problem is the fact that maybe Neville was assuming that everybody had read Bourdain's books, because we see some archival footage from his working in the kitchens and so forth. But he had people who were loyal to him for like 20 years who followed him from place to place. And there was really no focus on that. And I think that anybody who's worked in food service in any capacity can appreciate some of the challenges, some of the culture, et cetera, et cetera.
How ridiculously hard that
is. Yeah, and the hard work. I mean, whoa. I mean, unbelievable. Well, so I would have appreciated that a little more.
Well, and I do want to say before we wrap up here that if there is a complicated issue that Roadrunner does tackle well, it's this idea of the cultural tourism that's sort of built into the DNA of shows like Parts Unknown. And it's this catch-22 that Bourdain supposedly struggled with himself, which is this idea that in order to show the wider world what it's like to live in these third world countries and the issues that the people there face, you do sort of have to go in there and kind of encroach on it a little bit. Yeah. And how that
right. And you want to avoid idea, the exploitation. And
right. But at what is it possible to do that without exploitation? So I think that's a really interesting wrinkle here that I thought the movie did a good job of handling.
Yeah, exactly. And that was Roadrunner, the Anthony Bourdain documentary directed by Morgan Neville. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at I Carry You With Me and Pig. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
These thanks were handmade with organic free-range gratitude, an artisan appreciation containing absolutely no artificial sarcasm, but were processed in a facility that also produces irony. Our sincere thanks to the members, grantors, underwriters, and volunteers from the staff and board of SPR and the entire public radio ecosystem.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Anthony Bourdain documentary, Roadrunner. Let's now move to Te Llevo Conmigo, or I Carry You With Me, followed by Pig. For much of its running time, Heidi Ewing's film Te Llevo Conmigo, translated into English as I Carry You With Me, plays as a typical, if poignant, narrative film with characters portrayed by actors. But then Ewing offers her surprise. Her Spanish-language film, much of it shot in Mexico, is actually a blend of narrative and actual documentary. Ewing, whose past films include the 2007 Oscar-nominated documentary Jesus Camp, tells the real story of Puebla, Mexico native Ivan Garcia, who left his home to make a life in New York City, but can't erase the traces of his home country even after being joined by his lover, Gerardo Zabaleta. Though trained in the culinary arts, Ivan, who is portrayed as a young man mostly by the actor Armando Espitia, Gerardo is played by Cristian Vasquez, is unable to make a living in Puebla. So he braves the U.S. border, crosses over, and years later makes the improbable climb from delivery man to restaurant owner. Yet he yearns for the son he left behind. It's a yearning he can't help but continue to carry, and one that Ewing manages to powerfully convey.
Let's be clear. I think that the title of this film, Te Llevo Conmigo, is much easier to remember and say than I Carry You With Me, because we kept going in to try to get tickets, and I was like, what's the name of that film? So we'll just go with that for our purposes. But I knew nothing about this movie going into it, and Dan, you did reveal the surprise, so to speak, but I don't think that ruins anything. As a matter of fact, it might be a clarifying, because using this sort of hybrid approach as a framing device for what happens, I think does work in the end, and maybe knowing about it going into the movie puts you in a better position to appreciate fully what's happening. But yeah, I mean, so this is a movie about the immigrant experience. It is a movie about relationships between these two men that lasts despite distance and time and so forth. It's also about the relationship between our lead character and his best friend. So Ivan's best friend from childhood, I mean, early childhood, a woman who he goes to the U.S. with and so forth. There's that relationship.
Sandra, a woman played by the actress Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes, yes. And then there's his relationship with his son that, you know, is a part of this narrative as well. there's also the whole struggle of being gay, especially in a machismo culture where he's living in Puebla, Mexico, which is one of the reasons, but only one of the reasons he wishes to leave and come to the U.S. And then finally, there's the whole food backdrop and the whole food service backdrop and the sort of broken promises that were made to Ivan to actually be able to take a more active role in the running of a kitchen and so forth. And it's a story about struggle, but it's also a story about triumph. And so I don't know. I was knowing nothing about Te Llevo Conmigo. I was really impressed with this film. And actually, I'm happy that for the first time in a long time, we have three movies this week that I'm enthused about.
Yeah, well, and I think we've seen movies that have, you know, used both narrative and documentary elements to tell one story. But I've never seen it used quite like this, where the first two acts of the film are fictionalized and have actors playing these parts. And then the third act essentially becomes a documentary about these people that we assumed were fictional. And we discover that, oh, they really do exist in the real world.
Yeah, that's usually in a post-film
Credit cookie or something.
Exactly.
And how many times have we said the credit cookie where we see the real people was more interesting than the movie that came before it? So this maybe they were listening to our criticisms. I don't think so. I think there is something of a problem with the structure here, though, in that the dramatic scenes are weighted so heavily in terms of significance and screen time that the later documentary portions feel less fleshed out. And it feels more like a coda to me than it does a fully realized third act. It's almost like I wanted more context, even though we do get the emotional context and all of the logistics of, you know, these two characters' struggles in the first portion of the film, I Carry You With Me. I wanted a little bit more of their real lives.
And it's interesting because we know that in Jesus Camp, it was a pure documentary.
Which is really worth checking out,
right,
if people haven't
but
seen
here,
it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe these guys just weren't that interesting on camera, and so she
maybe
opted for the
Still,
other.
Still, the first, at least the first two-thirds of this movie are really compelling and really well done.
Yeah.
Two great central performances, too.
Yeah. And that was Te Llevo Conmigo, or I Carry You With Me. Let's close with Pig. We all know what a Nicolas Cage movie entails, or do we? In this strange little project, co-conceived and directed by Michael Sarnowski, Cage avoids his typical over-the-top acting gyrations. Remember his, "The bees, not the bees," scene from 2006's The Wicker Man? Here, Cage plays a sullen, damaged, mostly silent guy named Robin, who, living alone in the Oregon woods hunting truffles with his pet pig, goes on a determined hunt when his pig is stolen. Along with his sole connection to the larger world, the guy who buys his truffles, Amir, played by Alex Wolff, Robin searches throughout Portland, haunting the restaurant scene that looks at times like something out of the movie Fight Club. An offbeat blend of genres, Pig ends up being a weirdly affecting study of loss and grief, and it has to be said, a perfect use of Cage's unique talents.
A couple weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, we talked about this Mads Mikkelsen movie called Riders of Justice. And this movie, Pig, would actually make a great double feature with that because both of these movies set up all the pieces of what we expect to be a traditional revenge thriller. A man is wronged, something is taken from him, something he cares about is taken from him, and he goes out to seek justice. And all the way up until the halfway point of this movie, that's what I thought we were getting. And this movie doesn't so much knock those pieces down as just kind of gingerly walk around them. And there is something of a thrill in watching a film and realizing I have no idea where this is going, because there's a montage, an almost sweet photogenic montage that happens near the halfway point of this movie, which would actually probably be more in keeping with an Anthony Bourdain TV special. I don't want to give too much away, that I thought, this is not what I thought I was getting into when I started this movie, where Nicolas Cage is a mountain man who got his pig stolen. And you know, this pig almost takes on, you know, this cosmic significance. It represents something so much more than just a pig or even his well-being. And we figure out what that is. I don't know if the the final reveals of this movie are all that novel. I feel like I've seen them before in a lot of other indie dramas. But this movie is just so strange and unexpected, and it's so good to see Nicolas Cage remind you that he's a really good actor and that he's become so synonymous with basically, you know, playing to the back rows of the multiplex with overacting, that it's nice to see him really underplaying and creating this almost tender character in a premise that I was not expecting any tenderness whatsoever. So yeah, this was a real surprise.
And, I agree.
And I liked this quite a bit.
And the movie sort of divided into three distinct parts, which are obviously connected. And the filmmaker titles each one with sort of a food theme associated with it. And, you know, I wasn't sure about Alex Wolff because his energy was sort of frenetic, and I wasn't sure that that would work. But ultimately, his performance won me over because he's sort of Robin's only friend or only contact with the real world at this point in his life. And so we see Robin sort of move back in an effort to find his pig, move back into this foodie world in Portland. And of course, it brings up shades of Portlandia. There's one hysterical scene that just was way over the top in terms of food presentation.
It's like molecular gastronomy stuff.
Right, right. Yeah. But I really liked this a lot, and I was not expecting it to go some of the places that it did.
And I should say that I said that it subverts the revenge movie tropes. The guy, I'm not going to spoil anything. The guy does get his revenge in a way.
Yeah.
Just not in the way that you anticipate him to get the revenge.
Right.
Yeah, right. But the poor piggy.
Well, there were two piggies. So there was actually an understudy. And so I think they fared okay. Yeah. And no animals were harmed, ultimately, apart from the abduction.
You know, props to the pig casting.
Yeah, and yeah. You also, I mean, let's face it, we all have certain expectations, particularly over the last decade, for a Nicolas Cage movie. This is not that. This is not that at all.
It's not put the bunny back in the box.
And partly I think that's the direction, because there is at least one scene in which he does go over the top, but the direction pulls it back. It's pretty interesting. And that was our review of Pig. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Roadrunner and Te Llevo Conmigo, or I Carry You With Me. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarbrick for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words attributed to none other than Abraham Lincoln. Folks are usually about as happy as they make their minds up to be. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.